globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Poslušalki, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni v južni hemisferi. Ti lahkotni ritmi so iz dežele, v kateri življenje ni prav nič lahkotno. Vsaj tako se zdi, poslušamo ritme iz Eritreje. Ta država pa je v Afriki, včasih vklicani kot pozabljenem kontinentu, še najbolj pozabljena država. Dežela, ki se je osamosvojila v 90-ih, uradno leta 93, od Etiopije, z njo bila boj, pred kratkim so se spomnili tistih dogodkov tudi na slovenskih ustajah z postrom Mamula Go Home. Obrambni minister Jugoslavije, ki je prodajal orožje Etiopije v boju proti Eritreji. Eritreja je država, ki se brez kakršne koli tuje pomoči osamosvojila izpod jarma Etiopije, vendar pa svojemu ljudstvu nadela nov jarem kaj hitro in življenje tam ni steklo v boljšo prihodnost, temveč večjemu nasprotno. Sedanjost tam je kar se da neživljenjska. Eritrejčanov smo se spomnili pred kratkim poleti, ko so se izraelski državniki pa del njihovega prebivalstva na bolj ali manj sporen način, pa tudi rasističen, načeli vprašanje beguncev iz Afrike in številni begunci, Afričani, ki so danes v Izraelu, prihajajo ravno iz Eritreje. Tudi v veliki meri mladi ljudje na račun tega, ker so vpoklicani vsak obvezno v vojsko za nedoločen čas, ne kot recimo temu v zahodnih državah, kjer se gre za kako leto ali pa pol leta. Tam služenje vojaškega roka lahko pomeni tudi okupacijo tam do 12 let. Novinar aktualno politične redakcije Kraševec Marko se je pogovarjal z Eritrejčanom Emanuelom Girmejo, nekoč uradnikom ministrstva za informiranje v Eritreji, danes pa zaposlenega in ustanovitelja radija Erene v Parizu, ki poroča predvsem o Afriki in pa kolikor se le da tudi o Eritreji, iz katere je težko priti do kakšnih informacij, in pa z Andyjem Ryanom, Angležem, rojenim v Afriki in pa tudi profesorjem na Eritrejski univerzi, nekoč, danes seveda ne več, zaposlenim trenutno na Think Africa Pressu, torej medijski hiši, ki poroča tudi o dogajanju v Afriki. In z njim začenjamo, torej zakaj sploh povod za oddajo v Eritreji. Pred dobrima dvema tednoma je prišlo do prvega resnega uvida, da morda se bo tudi tam le kaj spremenilo. 200 vojakov je obkolilo za dvema tankoma ministrstvo za informiranje in sporočilo javnosti, da zahtevajo tako izpust vseh političnih zapornikov, po ocenah Združenih narodov naj bi bilo tam nekje med 5 in 10 tisoč, v državi 6 milijonov, ter da se ustava suspendirana, še preden je bila uveljavljena, končno uveljavi, torej ustava iz leta 1997, napisana po povsem normalnih demokratičnih normah, ki pa, če tudi bila spisana, odobrena strani predsednika, pa nikoli ni bila sprejeta in uveljavljena. Tako, in kar prisluhnimo Andyju Ryanu, začenši z torej 21. januarjem obkolitvijo ministrstva za informiranje.
I think it's still, events are still being pieced together. I mean, as you're aware, Eritrea is the hardest country on earth probably to be a journalist. It's consistently, Reporters Without Borders consistently names it the most difficult country on the planet to be a journalist. And the exact details are sort of still emerging about the incident. I think what's clear is that this event represents part of a power struggle within the administration. So this seems to have been led by generals who were not content with the way President Afewerki was treating them. In particular, a recent decision to distribute weapons to civilians. The president took that decision without consulting his generals, and that appears to have been a possible trigger. But at this stage, it's a little bit hard to see whether this is the actions of a few disgruntled generals, whether it's an organized opposition movement. It's not clear at this stage.
You mentioned the distribution of weapons to civilians. Can you maybe tell me more about this?
So the Afewerki government has, particularly the president himself, has created an incredibly powerful military regime. But one way he's tried to ensure his own power has always been to make sure that no individual general gets particularly powerful. So generals are regularly rotated, favorites are changed. Now, the distribution of weapons appears to be quite an overt attempt to undermine the other generals. So to undermine them by suggesting that actually, if you can put weapons into the hands of civilians, then that's kind of taking away from the general's power base. I mean, it's worth putting in context here the fact that civilians is actually a bit of a difficult term in Eritrea. Military service is compulsory, conscription is compulsory within the country, and it's often for indefinite periods of time. So every young individual in the country will be serving in some shape or form under conscription, and they can be doing so for as long as 10, 12 years.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that political pressure is quite severe in that country. For example, in the country of about 6 million people, there are between 5,000 till 10,000 political prisoners, which is quite a lot.
Yes, it is. I mean, the government's approach and the government's attitude to opposition is completely uncompromising. And I think what's important to understand is when people look at the idea of change in Eritrea and prospects for the future, the opposition movement, what does exist, is very, very fragmented. The government or the dictatorship has been very effective in not allowing any sort of opposition to be created, hence the numbers of political prisoners. It's also worth bearing in mind that some of those political prisoners are individuals who have refused to be conscripted into the forces. There's also certain groups, prisoners of conscience as well, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, who've been relentlessly targeted by the regime. So there are certain specific groups as well amongst that.
Kot je na koncu povedal, mnogo verskih skupnosti je tam preganjanih, dovoljene so krščanska verospoved, le tri od njih, le tri glavne tri, ortodoksna, katoliška in protestantska, vsi odkloni od tega ali pa kakaj bolj svojevrstne sekte, znotri teh seveda niso dovoljene, med v islamski veri pa je dovoljena samo sunitska veroizpoved, druge so prav tako prepovedane in preganjene. Zdaj pa se obrnimo še na zahteve, ki so jih postavili vojaki, ko so obkolili in zavzeli ministrstvo za informiranje. Prva je bila osvoboditev političnih zapornikov, druga implementacija ustave iz leta 1997. Razloži nadaljuje Andy Ryan.
The constitution is absolutely essential to any the possibility of any opposition movement in Eritrea being successful will be based around an adherence to the constitution. It's effectively a democratic document, so it legislates for multi-party elections. And originally, going back to Eritrea's independence in the mid-90s, President Afwerki committed to implementing this constitution. And initially, he, for reasons of saying, you know, the country needs to develop, the country needs to progress, he delayed its implementation. Now, within the ruling party, it's no longer even discussed, it's no longer really an accepted topic. But it's clear that for an opposition party, it remains the obvious blueprint for the country's future. And it's something that is people within the Eritrean diaspora, which it's worth noting is incredibly powerful. I mean, there's very large Eritrean communities now within the United Kingdom, within the United States of America, and within the diaspora and the sort of opposition movements there, the constitution's again and again referred to. The difficulty, however, is that there doesn't exist, because of the dictatorship's brutality, there doesn't exist a well-organized, obvious opposition that can necessarily take this document forward. Whether the attempt on the 21st is the start of that, we're maybe still not sure at this stage.
As I understand, the constitution itself was suspended before it came into force in 1979. Is that correct?
Yes, it's correct. Well, it's worth bearing in mind that throughout that period of time, originally Eritrea was during the 70s, it was in a sustained and continuous war with Ethiopia, and that was kind of the key thing. The constitution, it's worth noting, was ratified originally. This is more recently now. This is 1997 when it was ratified, but it's never actually been implemented. It's a genuinely democratic constitution that allows for a legislative, executive, judicial branch and balance between the three. It takes account of a genuinely elected National Assembly, but as I said, it's never ever been implemented, and there's no suggestion now that President Afwerki's party, the PFDG, would ever look to do that.
Skratka, veliko slabega, pa vendarle, kakšen je odnos Eritrejcev do te svoje novo nastale države, za katero so si tako prizadevali. Vendarle se držijo samozadostnosti, niso si dovolili postati marioneta kakšne neokolonialistične države. Komentar Andy Ryana.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated to follow the comments under the articles, and I've been lucky enough to meet a lot of Eritreans and spend time with a lot of young Eritreans, and I would very much accept that there is a very genuine divide. I mean, interestingly, I read not long before coming on air to speak to you that there'd been more recent comments with someone apologizing to me on behalf of people who had sort of commented negatively, but I think it's worth accepting there's an incredible amount of pride amongst a certain group of Eritreans in this idea of self-reliance. Eritrea fought for an extremely long time without any aid against Ethiopia, who was an enemy who outnumbered them substantially, had more financial resources, and they won. And they won that without any support from the Western world, and that's something they're very proud of. When they got their independence from Ethiopia, President Afwerki said, we will be self-reliant as a country. We won't take aid. We won't be influenced. And that's where this idea of not being a puppet for neocons is. From my personal perspective, for what it's worth, I think there's much that is admirable in this idea of self-reliance. You know, a lot of African countries have struggled and suffered to make the best use of aid. And if a country can do it itself, then maybe there's something there to be admired. The obvious problem in Eritrea, though, is that it's come in a system of dictatorship and in an economy that is barely functional. So self-reliance hasn't worked for Eritrea, but I very much respect the fact that for still a reasonable number of Eritreans, they're proud of their government's attempt to do this independently. They're proud of their government's attempt not to be influenced.
Yeah, we can maybe suspect or even conclude that through this independence that President Afewerki led in 93, he became like an iconic figure, a hero, like. And through this, he gained a lot of political power, which eventually it seems he used in order to stay on it.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think when you say an iconic figure, he was a war hero. And I think it's sometimes difficult for us in the West to necessarily understand. We don't really have that many war hero leaders anymore. I mean, I'm just speaking from a United Kingdom perspective. That's just not how our leaders are kind of... That's not the expectation that's put upon them. But President Afewerki was a man who, for years, was a soldier and a general leading his country in a very difficult struggle against Ethiopia. It meant when he assumed command, he was a hero, an iconic figure. I think today, and I have no, and there is no effective polling or scientific evidence to back this up, my overwhelming impression is that the vast majority of Eritreans have now lost faith in him. They gave him a considerable chance, and they were willing to give him time. They weren't even concerned when it took time for the constitution to be considered. But the country is now in such a dire state. I mean, there's the sale of both the repression and the poverty, that while a few Eritreans may still be loyal to him, I feel the majority are no longer.
And thus we have rebellions, which the political power try to oppress. Do you think that the rebellion will continue, and if it will, do you believe that it will be successful?
I think this is a fascinating question. I think for the rebellion to have any prospect of succeeding, there's a bit of a sort of odd paradox here. For the rebellion to have any prospect of succeeding, it must have support from within the armed forces, from the senior ranks within the armed forces, because Eritrea is best understood as a militarized nation. I mean, it has a huge number of soldiers. What little money the government does have is reinvested back into the army. So for a rebellion or a coup to be successful, it will need support from higher ranks in the military. There is no prospect. I think I'm quite sincere in this. I think there is very little prospect of some sort of popular revolt, some sort of Arab Spring scenario in Eritrea. I just feel the level of repression there and the lack of an organized opposition makes that unlikely. Now, the problem is, if you have a coup led by the military, there is no way of judging whether that coup will lead to the implementation of the constitution, an improved situation of Eritrea, or simply a transferal from President Afewerki to another dictator. I don't think anyone is in a position to judge yet whether a rebellion, whether a coup perhaps would be successful. But I think what's clear is that the event on January the 21st is the start of something. I think we would all be very surprised if there are not more events this year like it. But I think it's worth remembering a lot of people have their futures, a lot of important people in Eritrea have their futures invested with the regime. And it survived for a while, and it will take something quite considerable to remove it.
Sabre, chori. no more. Si te sabré ri, kalai hamdi bo, kalai fari, kalai falfi.
Se obrnimo še k Emanuelu Girmeju, Eritrejčanu, nekoč zaposlenemu na Ministrstvu za informiranje, danes na radiju v Franciji, ki ga je sam ustanovil in se ukvarja s topikami iz afriškega kontinenta, ter Eritreje specifično. Začenši z reakcijo predsednika Eritreje, Afewerkija, ki se je zgodila, če se je ta dogodek obkolitve ministrstva zgodil že 21. januarja, pa je predsednik potreboval kar 20 dni v nedeljo, se je oglasil in sam opisal dogajanje in dal nekaj istočnic, v katerih več Emanuel Girmeje.
Okay, just to give you an overview of the aftermath of the 21st January, what happened in Eritrea, in Asmara, in the capital. that we heard that recently, just 2 days ago, the president tried to deliver a message to the people that everything is under control and everything is okay, but he said he will give more elaboration later. But actually, he didn't say it. It was not live. Maybe he sent a message. Maybe it's another thing. And plus, another important thing is that yesterday there was a big event in Eritrea, which was supposed to be a big ceremony for the president too, but he failed to attend the ceremony. So we say that still in Eritrea, the situation is very tense, and we know that the army is still divided, and the president, with his own group, he tried to arrest all those who tried to do the mutiny and everything. So still the situation in Eritrea is confusing, and the situation is still very, very tense, I can say.
The opposition leader, the Tewolde Gebrselassie, said, and I quote, "Now the fierce Aki gradually is breaking and people are involvement to stand against the regime. Therefore, now and then we can expect unrest either from within the army or the people. So we can expect further rebellion in Eritrea."
Yeah, we can expect. You know what? These people, they are not just normal people. They were like military officers. And plus, it was not only one or two. They were like five or six, seven, with their group, like 200 soldiers with two tanks, plus three armored vehicles. So you can imagine that at least they have something in mind altogether. So if this could happen, why not another situation also? It could happen, yes, definitely, for sure. Because, you know, inside Eritrea, there's a lot of pressure for the people. The government is becoming very harsh and cruel to its people from time to time. There is mass arrest, and, you know, the human rights is not respected in the country. Everybody is forced to join the army. So there's no hope in the country. So finally, yes, definitely there will be a bigger even opposition inside the country.
There are 2 points maybe to address regarding the rebellion. First is this one, that it has difficulties to succeed if it's not supported by the army or some generals. And on the other point is that if the dictator is overthrown, probably the new dictator is just waiting to come out.
Yes, it's a bit frustrating. That's why I said it's a bit confusing, because, you know, that's the problem of dictatorship. They don't give a way to peaceful power transition. And that's what Isaias, the Eritrean president, also wants. He wants to create fear by just creating an image that after him, Eritrea will be a messy country or another Somalia in East Africa. So, yes, there's this issue. But we can say that at least, you know, Eritrean people, with the history they have, at least they will manage. We have this issue of, you know, the Eritrean dictator wanted to create another fear by saying that this is an Islamic issue, that some Islamic groups want to overthrow me like that. But it's not. With the history we have, the Muslims and the Christians, we share equal ideas or equal the same point of view regarding this dictator. So definitely all Eritreans will come to one point, and will say that dictatorship is enough, so we need a democratic and institutional government.
Evo optimistične besede Emanuela, pa nadaljujemo še z njegovo lastno izkušnjo, začenši z delom na ministrstvu za informacije s cenzuro, s katero se je soočal, in pa izselitvijo, in danes kot delavcu na Radio Arena v Parizu.
You know, we have a big problem in Eritrea, because we don't have any private media in Eritrea. Everybody is assigned to work. If you study journalism or you want to practice journalism, you have to work for the government. Working for the government means like serving a dictator with propaganda. So it's hard. It was difficult for me to continue to serve as a propaganda mission. So I decided to leave the country like all Eritreans do, just cross the border, because I had no any right of movement. I had no any right to have a passport. So I just crossed the border to the neighboring country, Ethiopia. And with the help of Reporters Without Borders, I managed to come to France and work with this radio. So I continue to be voice of my people instead of serving a dictatorship propaganda.
Andy Ryan said to me that we can expect a lot more refugees from Eritrea in the future also regarding the unrest in the country. This probably is true.
I don't think it's true, because you know we have enough of this problem. You know, Eritrea doesn't have a big population. It's only 4.5 or 4 million. So, you know, the majority of the young, they are in the army and they are still trying to escape the army. So already we have a big refugee number. So if something happened in Eritrea, like coup d'etat or a change in government, instead I believe that some refugees in worse situation, like in Sudan, in the border, like in Israel or in Ethiopia, in the camps, may have the opportunity to go back. I don't see it that way. I'm sorry for that.
Mm-hmm. Would you personally go back if the situation would change there?
Yes, definitely. That's my my dream. I want to go back to my country and to live with my own people and to serve my own people and to continue my profession in its right place.
Dragi poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušali ste Južno hemisfero, tokrat je bila tema Eritreja, z glasom iz Eritreje se je pogovarjal Marko Kraševec, gostila sva vas tehnik
Rok,
vse se poznava, in Matej, srečno.
Ne uđu.
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.